And then last week, I think we talked about CVS stopping dispensing or making it harder to dispense opioid medications. And Cigna is now getting in on the act. It's interesting. Cigna, the insurance company, is saying that they will not dispense OxyContin. They're going to take it off their covered list. Interestingly, they say because of its higher abuse potential, they're going to replace it with another medication which has lower abuse potential. But all of these medications can be abused. But it's interesting how, you know, bigger companies are getting involved in this movement to limit the availability, the accessibility to high abuse potential narcotic medications. And I guess that leads us nicely into the topic of opioid use in millennials. And Kumar Bhuvanandran. Good morning, Kumar.
Morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Thanks so much for joining us. Dr. Bhuvanandran is a professor of anesthesiology and pain medicine at Rush University Medical Center and is chair for the American Society of Anesthesiologists Committee on Pain Medicine. We're going to talk about the opioid use in millennials. The American Society of Anesthesiologists conducted a survey looking at trends in opioid use. Kumar, tell us a little bit about, number one, the background. What's going on in this country with regard to opioid use?
Well, thank you, everybody. Thanks, Jonathan, for inviting me on the show.
Of course.
The opioids is skyrocketing in terms of the number of mortality and morbidity from the consumption of opioids and secondary uses. In fact, there's a recent study of 2 years ago, last year, that came out that looked at the mortality among the younger generation between 25 to 55. In all developing countries, and the United States was the highest among them. And the number one reason for that was poisoning and several of them from opioids. So there's a clearly, compared to all other developed countries, the United States has an opioid epidemic with being considered to be an emergency in terms of the number of mortalities. In fact, you probably know, and people know, that the number of deaths from opioids surpasses the number of deaths from motor vehicle accidents. And so therefore, and these are the people that are dying, having these adverse events from opioids, are the very healthy young people, the Generation Xs. So it is very important that these people are the productive age groups, they're having this utilization of opioids and therefore having adverse events.
You know, Kumar, it's some comparison when you say that the number of people dying from opioid misuse, etc., is greater than the number of people who die every year from motor vehicle accidents. That sort of really puts it on our radar screen as a huge issue, and we certainly recognize the changes that there have been in society and the education that we've had and everything in terms of trying to reduce the motor vehicle accident death rate. And yet, you know, here we are, we have an opioid issue that is killing more people every year than motor vehicle accidents. You know, I heard, and it was some time ago now, and I have not gone back to check this out, that 80% of the world's opioid prescriptions are written in the United States of America. It wouldn't surprise me if that fact were absolutely the case. We do seem to be a country and a society that goes very much towards these opioid medications. Where do you think this came from? Why is it that we are so opioid dependent for our pain management? Is it something in the medical practice? Was it the pharmaceutical industry? Was it something in our society that we look for sort of either instant gratification or complete pain relief? What was it that led us to this point of tremendous opioid use, overuse, and abuse?
So I just want to say that fact is correct. I think it's about 80 to 85% of the opioid is consumed in the United States, in the world. And for the population of the United States compared to the globe, it is not 85%. Obviously, it's like 6 or 10%. So Obviously, the small percentage of people in the world consume about 85% of the opioids, and I think it is multifactorial. I mean, if it was just one factor, I believe people would, I mean, by now, with this emergency or declared thought process of declaring this an emergency, would have been resolved. I think it is initially it's a cultural expectation, as you said, you know, the recognition that I have pain, I need to be treated appropriately, and I need a strong medication to help me. The second, I think, it's also the medical community. There was probably a lack of education of the opioids and the medical curriculums. As a medical student, that you generate, go back into the residency, and people are taught, this is how I did it, and the residents are taught in a specific fashion, this is how to do it, and then they pass on that knowledge base. And thirdly, I think it's just the increasing pressure of pain being recognized as a as a quality metrics, and healthcare providers trying to achieve that. If your measurements are based, your quality of performance and reimbursements are based on how your patients rate you, the natural tendency is to prescribe opioids to keep those ratings high. And so it is, and then the pharmaceutical companies. So it's all multifactorial, and I don't think there's one specific reason that led to this crisis. However, having said that, there is hope in the future. I think there is discussion among all healthcare providers. In fact, I've been to several meetings as the American Society of Anesthesiologists chair. I met with the various societies, including the American Medical Association, the Emergency Room Physician Leadership, the pediatrics, and the pharmacist. And finally, the DEA director was there as well. And we met over several years, several 2 years now. And then we brought in the pharmaceutical companies as well into this discussion, the CVS, the Walgreens. And we have all kind of agreed to some documents of who are these high-risk patients. And the pharmacy is going to take equal responsibility in dispensing some of this opioid medication to the patients.
Yeah, see, I mean, I talked about this a little bit last week in terms of CVS, you know, making sure that their pharmacists are significantly involved with dispensing of opioid medications and getting back to the doctors and really, you know, making the keyhole much smaller to get these medications out, only dispensing a few of them rather than, you know, a month's worth, etc. And I think these are the kind of things that need to be done. I absolutely agree with you. I mean, I think this is a multifactorial issue. It's like almost like a perfect storm with all these different factors coming together. And as such, it requires various different approaches from different angles and at different levels to make a difference here in terms of getting us through this opioid epidemic. You're listening to Dr. Radio on Sirius XM Channel 110. This is The Rehab Show. I'm Dr. Jonathan Weitz, and my guest is Dr. Kumar Bhuvanandran, and we're talking about opioid use in general, but also specifically we're going to talk about opioid use in the millennials and a survey from the American Society of Anesthesiologists Committee on Pain Medicine that looked at trends of opioid use amongst millennials. Dr. Bhuvanandran is a professor of anesthesiology and pain medicine at Rush University Medical Center. Of course, the lines are open. If you have a thought, a comment, if you want to take part in this conversation, or perhaps you have a question about opioid use, 1-877-NYU-DOCS. It's 1-877-698-3627. Of course, the lines are open. We want to hear from you. We want to understand your perspective and also to answer your questions if there's something you need guidance and advice on with regards to opioid use. So, Kumar, tell us a little bit about this survey about opioid use in millennials. What were some of the key findings that came out from this survey?
The survey was done in about 1,000 people across the country with equal distribution of gender, you know, about 500 in each, male and female, in August of 2017. And what they really found out was that 3/4 of the Americans had some experience of acute pain, and 6 in 10 Americans were complaining of chronic pain. And so it is a common problem. I mean, even though we talk about this opioids, chronic pain and acute pain is much higher in incidence than compared to hypertension, cardiovascular diseases, or cancer combined in terms of incidence. So there's a very high incidence of pain as an entity. Having said that, then we zoomed into the millennials, the Generation X, the baby boomers, and the silent generation. The nutshell, the bottom line to this results of this 1,000 survey patients across the country, what the doctor found is the baby boomers are 2 times more likely than millennials to have opioids to treat their pain. So there is hope in the end of the tunnel is as the Generation X and the millennials come up compared to the baby boomers, you know, because the baby boomers, you know, are the silent generation, you know, take opioids, or the millennials and the Generation X prefer to manage their chronic pain by making lifestyle changes. And these lifestyle changes include a variety of stuff, you know, like exercising, changing their diet, changing the way they practice or what they do on a day-to-day basis. So there is hope that the millennials and the Generation X understand that opioids is not the only solution to their chronic pain. But on the flip side of it, the Generation X and the millennials can believe that they don't need to take this opioids when they do need it from the physician. They take it from their friends and family. And so there's this, again, this societal believe that when they need something, they can get it anywhere despite getting it from a prescription. So in one way, we see the tunnel getting better, light of the tunnel, that the millennials and the Generation X understand there are options for chronic pain and not just opioids. But on the other side, the generation just takes opioids when they need it. And they get it from anywhere, wherever they can. In this current age. And finally, I want to say this again, this millennials and the Generation X don't know, are not aware of how to dispose of these medications when they have finished using it. This is very critical because when these medications are left in the cabinets or around in the house, they're just used by another millennial that walks by or a Generation X. And then it is used just to give it to somebody else, and that person takes it. And the secondary and tertiary users suddenly have adverse events without knowing the exact pathophysiology or the exact problem of the medication. So it is very critical that we understand and we understand disposal of these opioids, these are strong narcotics, strong medications, ways that these prescriptions can be disposed of it. Rather than lingering in the residence of people.
Yeah, you bring up some very interesting findings from this study in terms of the Gen X and the millennials. They don't really want to use opioids. Maybe as a first line, they have other sort of perhaps what we would consider healthier alternatives in terms of lifestyle changes. But if they are going to use them, they tend to get them from a friend or from someone they know rather than by a prescription from a physician. That's of significant concern, and we'll come back to that. And then also for those pills that you have left over. And I think this goes beyond just the opioids in terms of lots of medications that people have if they're left over. How do we dispose of them in the correct way? So I think these are some very interesting outcomes from the survey that you performed. We're actually going to go to the lines, Kumar, and we have a caller from South Carolina. Liz, welcome to the show. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, you have a question for us or a comment?
Yes, I have chronic rheumatoid arthritis. I'm 57 years old.
Yes.
Actually happened quite suddenly about 3 years ago. I've been quite healthy up to that point, but and had never really dealt with any kind of opioids before, but seemed almost immediately to get, the tolerance grew really fast for them. It helped the pain. And then now, you know, I got to a point where it even at a normal dose, it was not doing what it did initially. And I do admit that there was I would wake up in the morning and it was really, really hard to get out of bed sometimes. I was almost in the constant flare. And so, yeah, I looked forward to that. I mean, I did, to get up and kind of help me get going in the day. Then a doctor put me on something that was horrendous, which I didn't know, something called buprenorphine. Are you familiar with that? It's a, there's another name, Suboxone, I think they call it.
Yep.
Oh, man. Then, you know, coming off of that, that didn't have that same, I thought it was safer because it didn't give that same kind of feeling. I was worried that I was getting addicted because of, I was looking forward to that feeling.
Right.
And, but I came off of that when I did some reading on that, and, you know, now I'm to the point where I just really don't know where to turn. My insurance does not want to cover one of the biologics.
So at this time, Liz, you're taking one of the narcotic pain medications for your rheumatoid arthritis.
I'm taking it three a day, but it still concerns me because my doctor says, he says, you know, they're just going away. He said, what's happening is, you know, because I understand why, because of the opioid crisis, and the more reading I do, the more frightening it seems.
Sure.
But, yeah, and, you know, I've dealt with some problems because of it, chronic constipation. I know it's not a good thing.
Right. So I think what's going on here is, you know, you have rheumatoid arthritis, which is, you know, an inflammatory condition of joints, typically managed by a rheumatologist with various different medications. But Dr. Bhuvanandaran, what are your thoughts in terms of Liz's situation? Here she is. She has chronic rheumatoid arthritis. She's on narcotic medications. Her desire would be obviously to come off those medications and perhaps be on something a little less concerning from the perspective of an opioid. What are your thoughts on that? How does somebody come off these kind of narcotic pain medications?
So, Liz, thank you for calling in. So, I mean, again, it is a challenging disease because it's a systemic disease. It is not localized to just one part of the body. But even though your hands or your legs may be the main cause of the problems. So again, as you said, as Jonathan said, you definitely need to see the rheumatologist who's probably going to put you on some on medications that can control your rheumatoid arthritis. But in terms of the pain that it generates, I think it is valuable to think of options of lifestyle changes, but also to think of a multimodal therapy as treatment options. What I mean by multimodal is that not solely relying on a drug such as opioids. There's clearly studies that have shown that combining medications that act at different receptors are actually beneficial. So, for example, if you are able to take a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug, you may be able to reduce your opioid consumption by 20-30%. True enough, you will take more medications, but if you're able to reduce the opioid consumption, then that's a benefit. There are other classes of drugs that can be combined again that can essentially lead to reduction in opioid utilization. And finally, I do want to say that patients who are on opioids, you have to be very careful in taking them off. It is not, you should not stop them. You should gradually wean them. It needs to be done by a healthcare provider advising you, because you will go through withdrawal, especially just like Liz has been on this for about 3 years. Our patients become opioid tolerant. And when you do stop those opioids, you will go through withdrawals that can lead to serious adverse events.
Yes.
I mean, you know, increasing heart rate and blood pressure.
Yeah, I agree with that. You've got to be very careful, Liz. But, I think, you know, number one, you're recognizing that there could be an issue here, and that's really a lot of the battle here. So you've done a great job already. Thank you so much for calling in and discussing this. Number two is, as we have both said, Dr. Bhuvanandaran and myself, do see a rheumatologist and have the rheumatologist manage your rheumatoid arthritis in general from the disease activity. I know you mentioned that the insurance company didn't want to give you any of the disease-modifying agents, but go through a rheumatologist. Maybe they can help justify that. Number two is, if you're having a hard time managing your pain in general, you might want to seek out a pain management specialist. And when you see that pain management specialist, you can go in and say, listen, I'm on opioids, and my goal is to come off opioids. If you're the right doctor to help me on this journey, then we can work together. But if you're the kind of doctor who's going to keep pushing more opioids, that's not what I'm interested in. But working with a doctor who is a specialist in this, who can give you alternatives and help you slowly wean, I think that's the key as well. So, Liz, thank you for calling in, and we wish you all the best. And perhaps you'll call in again in a few months and let us know, hopefully, a good success story that you've seen your rheumatologist, seen a pain management doctor, and you're weaning off those narcotics. But good luck with all of that. We're heading from South Carolina to Maryland. Welcome, Sam, to the show. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. A fascinating program. I was just wondering, in terms of gateway practices, you know, now with the legalization of marijuana in Maryland, certainly in other stores, do you feel that that would be a gateway portal or a practice that would promote an opioid epidemic?
That's very interesting. That's a great question. Does the use of marijuana recreationally or medical marijuana, does that lead in terms of a gateway to abuse of other medications like opioids? What are your thoughts, Dr. Bhuvanandaran, on that?
I believe that, again, in marijuana can be used medically in the state of Illinois. But, you know, between the two, I don't believe there's sufficient research currently on the interactions between these opioids and marijuana, and the cannabinoids in specific. So we have to be careful on when we use these drugs in combination, whether for the medical use or recreational utilization. And so I would exercise caution. Now, if you are just using a cannabinoid such as marijuana for your pain, there is earlier reports that patients do feel better without adverse events. But I do want to emphasize that even though it is legal in certain states, the federal government considers this still an illicit drug. And it has not gone through the process of studies, clinical studies, FDA approval, like all other medications that we use on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, so I think, Sam, it's a great point to bring up, and I think, you know, overall, we don't have any final answers to the use of marijuana or the growing use of recreational marijuana. Listen, people have been using marijuana for years and years and years. I don't think, personally, that that's the source of the opioid issue that we have now. If it was, then we would have had opioid abuse going on for as long as there's been marijuana around. That hasn't really been the case. So it might be an element of it as well. We said before this is multifactorial, but I think probably on the sort of the less impact side. And I agree with Dr. Bhuvanandaran with regards to medical marijuana. And, you know, marijuana as a medicine needs to go through the same rigorous testing as we do for any medication that comes out, and that way we can use it to its greatest potential. I think if we rush marijuana through the system and we don't do the right studies on it, we won't know the right, you know, dosage and frequency and route of administration to get the best potential, and we won't really recognize some of the side effects or the risks of it. So it's a huge topic, Sam, and a very important one to bring up, and I think we should all be aware, and we should all be cautious, as I believe Dr. Bhuvanandaran has suggested. Sam, thank you so much for your call and for joining in and taking part in this show. Kumar, sadly, we run out of time pretty quickly. We cover quite a few topics here, but in terms of the general public's, our listeners' access to this report on the millennials and other information, are there websites, are there places that people can go to get more insight and understanding from sort of an official perspective, such as your society?
Yes, so the American Society of Anesthesiologists is www.asahq.org. Again, it's www.asahq.org, and there's a press release, and the study itself is posted on the website. The American Society of Anesthesiologists is 52,000 anesthesiologists. That's like the rehab medicine. We are one of the large societies, and we have our annual meeting in Boston in October 20th. So we'll be discussing this. But again, it is easily accessible on the website of our national body, And again, this will soon be in print in various journals. But again, it's available on the Twitter, and again, it can be seen on the website. The entire study could be seen there.
And just
so look forward to people jumping on, and thanks for inviting me, Jonathan.
Say that again, I'm sorry?
So thank you for inviting me to share with you this early morning.
Yes, no, I appreciate you being with us. Just one final word from you. The future, if we listen, if we pay heed, if we make changes, do you think we're going to get through this opioid epidemic? I mean, the sadness that I see in certain parts of America where this is rife, you know, it's heartbreaking. Can we as a country, as a society, as families and individuals, can we get through this?
My belief, or my personal belief, that I think there's sufficient awareness. And over the next 3 to 5 years, you will see a plateau of this epidemic, and after 5 years, you start seeing a decline in this opioid epidemic and opioid deaths. It will take time because this is a national problem that has gone
right
into the inner cities. But I think over the next after 5 years, you will see a decline. But initially, I think it's important to put a stop and to have a plateau phase before it starts going down. So
good, we're going to get there. We're going to get through this.
Correct.
Kumar Bhuvanandaran, thank you so much for joining me, and thank you for spreading information and knowledge and helping us as a society, as a country, overcome this. Good luck with all of your work, and I hope you have a good time and have good conversation at your national meeting coming up later in Boston. We're heading to the break right now. When we come back, Dr. Beth Haller will be joining us, and we'll be talking about how we discuss, how we represent individuals with disabilities in the media. Stay tuned. You're listening to Dr. Radio on Sirius XM, Channel 110.